This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a report out today analyzed data about teachers in the Milwaukee metropolitan area, including how Act 10 affected teacher training and retention. We'll talk to the lead researcher about the report's findings coming up.
First, there's been a lot of speculation that Joe Biden's name could end up on presidential ballots, and some Republican efforts could keep Donald Trump's name off of the ballot in key primary states.
Harry Enten joins us now for a weekly look at the latest in national politics and news from the president. Campaign trail. Harry is a senior political writer and analyst for 538. Harry, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
A lot of buzz this week, Harry, about a possible Joe Biden run for president. Now, is this a real possibility, or is it just the sort of thing we get excited about in August when there's not a lot going on but won't really go anywhere?
You know, I started off thinking that this was just something that's being floated. Biden's name has been mentioned in a number of polls going back many months. He's the sitting vice president. He's never said he wasn't going to run, but it just always seemed like more of a fairy tale than something that might actually come true. But in the past few days, we're hearing more reports that Biden's holding meetings with fellow Democrats, that donors are potentially talking up raising money for him. So I don't put anything past him. I think the conventional wisdom is still that he's not going to, but the conventional wisdom is also pushing the other way. The chance of him running is increasing by the day.
You mentioned polls. Now, these are polls comparing somebody who is actively running and somebody who isn't. But based on that, what have we seen in a Biden-Clinton race?
Well, it's not good news for the vice president. Biden has consistently polled no more than 15% of the vote in most of the early states and nationally. He's usually around 10%. Clinton, in most of these polls, is at around 50%, and Bernie Sanders, depending on which state you're looking at, is usually in the low 20s, though in New Hampshire he's polling higher than that. So Biden is really in third place if you look at most of the polling data, but again, he hasn't declared anything one way or the other, and once he does declare, we should see some sort of a boost in his numbers. Where that puts him exactly, we can't be sure yet.
Now, you've written that Biden is buying time now, or Biden his time, if you will, to see if Hillary Clinton's campaign could be derailed by this State Department email story. So is he a candidate waiting in the wings for now?
Yeah, I would say, you know, there's running for president and then there's officially running. I mean, Biden is running in the sense that he's clearly thinking about it. He's clearly putting feelers out there. But if he doesn't think he can win or have a legitimate shot of winning, I can't really see him running. So he's going to sort of, as we say, Biden his time, and see where things are in the next few weeks to a month. And if Clinton's numbers, especially among the general electorate, continue to fall, and there's a feeling among Democrats, both the party actors, governors, senators, whatnot, and donors, that Clinton's vulnerable, then I think we'll see Biden get in. But if there's a sense that Clinton has been able to straighten things out and that she's doing well, I think it's far less likely.
Staying on the Democratic side, you mentioned Bernie Sanders. You and some of your colleagues at 538 did a thought experiment online. What would it take for Bernie Sanders to win? What did you come up with?
So I think, you know, the first thing that Bernie just needs to do is he needs to win both Iowa and New Hampshire. I think that's just so necessary, because if he loses either one of those states, then Clinton's going to head into South Carolina, where she does exceedingly well in the polls. So, you know, if she's been losing support among white voters and specifically white liberals, among African Americans, her support remains very, very strong. I don't believe there's been a single poll out this year that has Bernie Sanders doing better than 10% among African Americans. And if you look at who votes in South Carolina in the Democratic electorate, it's an overwhelmingly African American electorate. And Clinton is in a very, very good position in that state. So if Sanders is going to be able to win, he has to win both of those early states, and then a lot of other things need to happen. But it's, of course, possible. You know, campaigns are funny things. Who would have thought that Joe Biden would have got into the race 3 months ago, and now we're thinking that he may, in fact, get in. So anything's possible.
And suppose there's a Joe Biden in the race. Establishment Democratic voters are, some of them anyway, splitting from Clinton to Biden. Does that open a door for Sanders' more insurgent type of campaign?
Sure. I mean, it will certainly allow him a better shot to win more states. But the key thing to remember in all of this is all of the Democratic primaries allocate delegates proportionally. So if Sanders is still getting only a third of the vote, he's only going to get a third of the delegates. So that's part of the reason why it's just very difficult to imagine that Sanders is going to be able to pull it off. But if, say, Biden entered and then Sanders starts winning some states, that in itself creates momentum. He gets good press. Good press leads to more money leads to more ads. More ads lead to more voters on his side, and maybe he's able to pick up votes. So I'd say Biden getting in is good news for Sanders, but either way, it's going to be an uphill climb for him.
Talking to Harry Enten about the latest in national politics and from the campaign trail, let's turn to the Republican side of that trail now, Harry. Some state parties, including North Carolina and Virginia, are looking to require candidates to vow not to run a third-party campaign if they don't win the presidential nomination. And I guess South Carolina already has something like that in place. Who do they have in mind there?
They have one person and one person in mind, and it's the one person that's on everybody's tongue, and it's Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump has blasted onto the scene, but if you go back and watch the Fox News debate or you listen to anything that he has said so far, he's been very hesitant to say that he won't run as a third-party candidate, and most of the polling shows that that would hurt whomever the Republican candidate ends up being if it's not Donald Trump. But I should say that there are reports out within the last 24 hours which do suggest that Trump is going to say that he won't run as a third-party candidate. And that's, of course, very important, not only for the Republican Party in the general electorate, but it could also buy Trump some favor among Republican voters in the primary.
And he maybe has more incentive to make a vow like that as he leads in lots of polls around the country, in states around the country. What are his prospects looking like?
Well, you know, this Trump boomlet is turning into a Trump summer, which could turn into a Trump fall and summer. You know, there were a lot of us, including myself, who, you know, who said, oh, Donald Trump, you know, lead for a few seconds. But the fact is, if you look at how long he's been leading in the polls, it is now longer than any of those boomlets we saw during the 2012 cycle, whether it be Herman Cain, Newt Gingrich, or Rick Perry, who led and then fell off. His lead has already been for about almost 2 months now. So he's doing very, very well, but there still are a lot of questions as to whether, when more of the candidates start spending money on the air, as more of them get more press, can Trump actually maintain the lead? And, you know, he's still only polling in the mid-20s in most places. So at this point, he's certainly doing better. You know, his prospects look better than they did a few weeks ago, but it's still going to be a long trek for somebody who most of the party actors, governors, congressmen, don't really like.
And there's been a long-ish history, I think, of candidates looking real good until actual votes start being cast. I guess I'm thinking of Tim Pawlenty, I think Michelle Bachmann, Howard Dean, other cases like that. Could something like that happen with Donald Trump?
Sure. I mean, you could just go back through the history and just start naming people. I mean, Joe Lieberman, Howard Dean, even in years in which there's one candidate who's overwhelmingly doing very, very well, there's another candidate who looks like they're going to be an insurgent, and then they fall flat once the actual voting started, like even a Bill Bradley in 2000. There are just so many candidates that you go through the years and you say, oh, wow, they might take off, and then it all sort of falls apart. And the traditional metrics that we look at, you know, experience of holding political office, being well-liked within the party, these types of things still don't look good for Trump. But the longer he holds out and the longer he holds that poll lead, and maybe, you know, you get someone like Jeff Sessions who stands on the stage with him down in Alabama, the senator down there, then all of a sudden you start twiddling your hair and you go, maybe.
You mentioned Alabama. We're seeing Republican candidates spending time in states like Alabama, Mississippi, Michigan, and others, a lot of them with primaries in March after the February rounds, the early ones in Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina. Does this big Republican field open up maybe a new strategy where you say, the heck with those early states that everybody's going after, I'm going to pick out a few of those second round ones and make a splash there?
So, you know, what I would say is essentially that you don't have to win in either Iowa or New Hampshire. You don't have to win there, but you do need to keep your name in the news. The reason why these early states are important isn't because, you know, there's something very telling about what the electorate in Iowa or New Hampshire says. It's the fact that the media picks up whoever wins there, and then they get all this press, and then it starts a momentum train. Remember, John McCain did not win in Iowa or come anywhere close to winning in Iowa in 2008, but then he was able to come fairly close. They said he was in a tie for third place and then won in New Hampshire and then won in South Carolina. It was all over. This year, it's the person who wins in Iowa and New Hampshire might only win with 20-25%. So to come in second or third, you might only need 10-15% of the vote. If you can stay within the news media, stay within the news cycle, keep your name getting out there, then yes, you don't have to win one of these early states. You only need to do fairly well, and then you can go to the South or wherever your particular candidate's doing well, and win there and crush. So this year could be a very unique cycle in that, but you still have to do at least decently well in Iowa and New Hampshire in order to win the nomination.
So if I'm finding myself coming in 9th and 12th and 14th in those first three, maybe it's time to pack it in?
Yeah, I mean, Rudy Giuliani tried this in 2008, you know, on the Republican side. It was a fairly crowded field then as well. You know, no candidate won with more than, I think, 36% of the vote. I think McCain won 36% of the vote in New Hampshire, and that was the highest out of the early states. And then Rudy thought, oh, I'll just wait till Florida. It doesn't work. When Rudy finished near the bottom in, you know, the early states, it didn't work for him. You need to at least finish somewhere relatively well, keep your name in the news. If you don't do that, you're adios, amigos.
Let's end with the impact of Donald Trump on the other Republican candidates. We've seen some of them, I think, start to change the way they talk, what they're talking about. Is he having a factor on the messaging from the other 16, 17 candidates?
You know, we've seen them certainly on the question of immigration, you know, perhaps take more of a line that is more against illegal immigration, maybe being a little tougher, stricter on it. But keep in mind, Donald Trump is not somebody who has an ideology that he sticks to no matter what. He sticks to the ideology that the voters are telling him will help him win votes. This is the Republican base that is saying to Donald Trump, this is where we want you to stand, this is how you're going to win votes. So if Trump weren't in there, there would be somebody else who would probably be saying the exact same things, and the Republican, you know, the mainstream Republican candidates would probably be being pulled towards positions that Donald Trump is currently articulating.
Harry, thanks as always.
Thank you.
That's Harry Enten. He's senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us every week at this time for a look at the latest in national politics.